How's everybody doing tonight? I'm glad to hear that, Mike. I'm doing pretty good. I'm doing pretty good too. Does it feel later than it's supposed to be to anybody else? It's only like 10 after 6. It feels like it's 9 p.m. right now to me. I'm going to have to get something. I don't know. It's been a good one so far though. I like that have the chance to chat with you guys this evening on the heels of this morning's lesson. I'm going to spend a few minutes talking about something that many of you, or I should say more than a few, personally approached me about after last Sunday evening when we had the Q&A. And then I'm actually going to read a parable to you that I think will connect with us on multiple levels. And I just want us to think about it. And I think it actually will have a lot to do with the questions that were asked. I think it has a lot to do with us in general. So I think that'll be something that'll be enriching and beneficial for us. Before I do that, though, I wanted to say one thing. I just want to commend everybody on the incredible spirit of benevolence that is here at 36th Street. So much stuff has been going on through November and now December as well. We've had everything from 17,000 potluck meals for each and every sector of our congregation. There have been donations on every front for families that have lost their homes and have suffered tragedy. Over 110, I think 114 or 115 gifts were wrapped together and sent out to needy children for the upcoming holiday. You guys have been incredible. There was even an anonymous card sent to us this last Sunday. We received that, whoever you are. I want you to know that it came at the right time for Katrina and I. We're very moved and blown away and thankful by what we have seen here. So I know we talk a lot about being better, getting better, growing, and where we want to go and things that need to improve. But I also want you to know, in many ways, you're doing better than you think. And I think I'll leave it at that. At the end of last Sunday evening, we had our Q&A session, and we talked about religious holidays, and that sparked a lot of genuine questions. I really appreciated those. I want to share just a couple of thoughts to the end of a question that I received multiple times, and then I'm going to read this parable that is not directly related to any type of holiday, but I think connects, and I think more so it just connects with us in general, and I'd like us to think about it as we move into 2020 through this holiday season. The question that I got after our Q&A was, well, we'll really appreciate the way you and Mike broke that down. We know that it's a touchy subject for some folks, and I appreciated these questions being brought to us in that frame of reference because it meant that what we said last week was received, as Mike kind of prayed about, with an open heart, and you understood the level that we were trying to come on. But the question that was genuine was this. Well, I was always taught, and I've even taught in some instances other people, that Jesus' birth doesn't really matter that much. But was I wrong about that? And I got that from multiple people, so if you think I'm speaking directly to you, that's not the case, and that's why I wanted to share a couple of reasons why. Yeah, I think it actually does, whether you're viewing it in a religious connotation or not. So here's a couple of reasons I just want to share with you so that you can feel good about whenever you decide to think about the fact that Jesus decided to come to earth, that he came for us. The first reason that it matters to us is that God's faithfulness matters. It is the ultimate demonstration of God's faithfulness in the incarnation. The ultimate demonstration that the things that God promised way back to Abraham back in Genesis chapter 22, that through his descendants the entire world was going to be blessed, and then later spoken of by Paul in his letter to the Galatians in chapter 3, these are all of these things coming to fruition. It is the greatest expression that you can trust everything that this God that you follow and know and love actually says. So the first reason that the incarnation matters is that God's faithfulness matters. The second reason is that God did something in Jesus in the incarnation that no other religion even fathoms claiming. God dwelt with man. God came and got his hands dirty. We read the beginning parts of John many times. In the beginning was the Word, and the Word was God. The Word was with God, and then the Word became flesh and walked among us. That is an incredible claim. that God would actually come. That word Emmanuel that we talked about, God with us, that he tabernacled with us, that he came and walked with us, felt what we felt, experienced what we experienced, is something that you will not find anywhere else. It's important for that reason. The third reason is that when he came, he didn't come as we expected him. We talk about this a lot in a roundabout way. Think about this. If you were the God of all, the great I Am, as we've already mentioned tonight, you could have come as a conquering king. You could have come as a person of great political power and renown. But that's not the power of Jesus. The power of Jesus coming, and the reason why it matters, is that God became a servant. He didn't just come and get his hands dirty. He came, and instead of becoming someone with great influence and power and great things given to him that would precede him, he literally experienced the whole of what mankind has ever experienced. Think about it this way. No matter how bad our lives are or how tough things can be, and we've talked a lot about how tough 2019 has been, you do not serve a God. You do not follow a Jesus. You do not have a Messiah who will ask you to do something that he is unwilling to do himself. And those are the best kind of coaches, the best kind of folks to follow. Jesus coming matters because of God's faithfulness. It matters because God dwelt with man. It matters in the way that he came, that he became a servant. Paul says in Philippians 2:7 that he took the form of a servant. And it matters, fourthly and lastly, and what will lead into this parable, it matters because he came for you. He came for us. Now, I'm going to read a parable that I discovered a couple of years ago, and it made a tremendous impact on me. I actually shared this in the young adult discussion group this past Wednesday, and we didn't get to talk about it as long as I would have liked to. I'm going to take my time going through this, and I don't know that I will actually have anything that I want to say on the other side. That's because I believe it speaks so accurately to us no matter where we are in our journey with God. And I think there's something here for all of us. And I think I will just leave it on one final point when I finish. I'm going to read this to you, and I want you to think about, where am I in this parable? Have I experienced this? Am I multiple people in this parable? Where is God in this parable? Where is Jesus in this parable? And how does this relate to me as I am moving forward? So, are you ready for story time? It's going to be story time. I'm going to feel like I'm at a library or something, you know, just reading directly. I'll try not to travel too much so that you guys can really focus and not think about how ridiculous I am up here moving around. This is called the Parable of the River. Once there were five sons who lived in a mountain castle with their father. The eldest was an obedient son, but his four younger brothers were rebellious. Their father had warned them of the river, but they had not listened. And he had begged them to stay clear of the bank lest they be swept downstream, but the river's lure was too strong. Each day the four rebellious brothers ventured closer and closer until one son dared to reach in and feel the waters. "Hold my hand so I won't fall in," he said, and his brothers did. But when he touched the river, the current yanked him and the other three into the rapids and rolled them down the river. Over the rocks they bounced, through the channels they roared, and on the swells they rode. Their cries for help were lost in the rage of the river. Though they fought to gain their balance, they were powerless against the strength of the current. And after hours of struggle, they surrendered to the pull of the river, and the waters finally dumped them on the bank in a strange land, in a distant country, in a barren place. Savage people dwelt in the land. It was not safe like their home. Cold winds chilled the land. It was not warm like their home. Rugged mountains marked the land. It was not inviting like their home. Though they did not know where they were, one fact they were of sure. They were not intended for this place. For a long time, the four young sons lay on the bank, stunned at their fall and not knowing where to turn. Some of the time, they gathered their courage and re-entered the waters, hoping to walk upstream, but the current was too strong. They attempted to walk along the river's edge, but the terrain was too steep, and they considered climbing the mountains, but the peaks were too high. Besides, even if they could, they didn't know the way. Finally, they built a fire and sat down. "We shouldn't have disobeyed Father," they admitted. We're a long way from home. With the passage of time, the sons learned to survive in this strange land. They found nuts for food and killed animals for skins. They determined not to forget their homeland, nor abandon hopes of returning. And each day they set about the task of finding food and building shelter. Each eventually built a fire and told stories of their father and older brother. Each evening they would sit around and share these stories. All four sons longed to see their father and older brother again. Then one night, one brother failed to come to the fire. The others found him the next morning in the valley with the savages. He was building a hut of grass and mud. "I've grown tired of our talks," he told them. "What good does it do to remember? Besides, this land isn't so bad. I will build a great house and settle here." "But it isn't home," they objected. "No, but it is if you don't think about the real one." "But what about father?" "What of him? He isn't here. He isn't near. Am I to spend forever waiting for his arrival? I'm making new friends. I'm learning new ways. If he comes, he comes. But I'm not holding my breath." So the other three left their hut-building brother and walked away. They continued to meet around the fire each night, speaking of home and dreaming of their return. Some days later, a second brother failed to appear at the campfire. The next morning, his siblings found him on the hillside, staring at the hut of his brother. "How disgusting," he told them as they approached. "Our brother is an utter failure. He is an insult to our family name. Can you imagine a more despicable deed, building a hut and forgetting our father?" "What he's doing is wrong," agreed the youngest. "But we all did wrong as well. We disobeyed. We touched the river. We ignored our father's warnings." "Well, we may have made a mistake or two, but compared to the sleaze in that hut, we are saints. Father will dismiss our sin and punish him." "Come," urged his two brothers, "return to the fire with us." "No, I think I'll keep an eye on our brother. Someone needs to keep a record of his wrongs to show father." And so the two returned, leaving one brother building the hut and the other judging. The remaining two sons stayed near the fire, encouraging each other and speaking of home. Then, one morning, the youngest son awoke to find he was alone. He searched for his brother and found him near the river, stacking rocks. "It's no use," the rock-stacking brother explained as he worked. "Father won't come for me. I must go to him. I offended him. I insulted him. I failed him. There is only one option. I will build a path back up the river and walk into our father's presence. Rock upon rock I will stack until I have enough rocks to travel upstream to the castle. When he sees how hard I have worked and how diligent I have been, he will have no choice but to open the door and let me into his house." And the last brother did not know what to say. He returned to sit by the fire alone. And one morning, he heard a familiar voice behind him. "Father has sent me to bring you home." The youngest lifted his eyes to see the face of his oldest brother. "You've come for us," he shouted. For a long time, the two embraced. "And your brothers?" the eldest finally asked. "Well, one has made a home here, another is watching him, and the third is building a path up the river." And so the firstborn set out to find his siblings. He went first to the thatched hut in the valley. "Go away, stranger," screamed the brother through the window. "You're not welcome here." "I've come to take you home." "You have not. You've come to take my mansion." "This is no mansion," the firstborn countered. "This is a hut." "It's a mansion, the finest in the lowlands. I built it with my own hands. Now go away. You can't have my mansion." "Don't you remember the house of your father?" "I have no father." "You were born in a castle in a distant land where the air is warm and the fruit is plentiful. You disobeyed your father and ended up in this strange land. I've come to take you home." And the brother peered through the window at the firstborn, as if recognizing a face he'd remembered from a dream. But the pause was brief, for suddenly the savages in the house filled the window as well. "Go away, intruder," they demanded. "This is not your home." "You're right," responded the firstborn son. "But neither is it his." The eyes of the two brothers met again. Once more, the hut-building brother felt a tug at his heart, but the savages had won his trust. "He just wants your mansion," they cried. "Send him away." And so he did. Firstborn sought the next brother. He didn't have to walk far. On the hillside near the hut, within eyesight of the savages, sat the fault-finding son. When he saw the firstborn approaching, he shouted, "How good is it that you are here to behold the sins of our brother? Are you aware that he turned his back on the castle? Are you aware that he never speaks of home? I knew you would come. I have kept careful account of his deeds. Punish him, and I will applaud your anger. He deserves it. Deal with the sins of our brother." The firstborn spoke softly, "We need to deal with your sins first." "My sins?" "Yes, you disobeyed Father." The son smirked and slapped at the air. "My sins are nothing. There's the sinner," he claimed, pointing to the hut. "Let me tell you of the savages who stay there." "I'd rather you tell me about yourself." "Don't worry about me. Let me show you who really needs the help," he said, running toward the hut. "Come, we'll peek in the windows. He never sees me. Let's go together." The son was at the hut before he noticed the firstborn hadn't followed him. Next, the eldest son walked to the river. There he found the last brother, knee-deep in the water, stacking rocks. "Father has sent me to take you home." And the brother never looked up. "I can't talk now. I must work." "Father knows you have fallen, but he will forgive you." "He may," the brother interrupted, struggling to keep his balance against the current. "But I have to get to the castle first. I must build a pathway up the river. First, I will show him that I am worthy, and then I will ask for his mercy." "He has already given his mercy. I will carry you up the river. You'll never be able to build a pathway. The river is too long, and the task is too great for your hands. Father sent me to carry you home. I am stronger." For the first time, the rock-stacking brother looked up. "How dare you speak to me with such irreverence? My father will not simply forgive. I have sinned. I have sinned greatly. He told us to avoid the river, and we disobeyed. I am a great sinner, and I need much work." "No, my brother, you don't need much work. You need much grace. The distance between you and your father's house is too great. You haven't enough strength nor the stones to build the road. That is why our father has sent me. He wants me to carry you home." "Are you saying that I can't do it, that I'm not responsible? Are you saying that I'm not strong enough? Look at my work. Look at my rocks. Already I can take 5 steps. "But you have 5 million to go." The younger brother looked at the firstborn with anger. "I know who you are. You're the voice of evil. You're trying to seduce me away from my holy work. Get behind me, you serpent." And he hurled at the firstborn the rock he was about to place in the river. "Heretic," screamed the path builder. "Leave this land. You can't stop me. I will build this walkway and stand before my father, and he will have to forgive me. I will win his favor. I will earn his mercy." The firstborn shook his head. "Favor won is no favor. Mercy earned is no mercy. I implore you, let me carry you up the river." The response was another rock. And so the firstborn left. The youngest brother was waiting near the fire when the firstborn returned. The others didn't come? No, one chose to indulge, the other chose to judge, and the third chose to work. None of them chose our father. "So they will remain here?" He nodded slowly. "For now." "And we will return to father?" asked the brother. "Yes." "Will he forgive me? Would he have sent me if he wouldn't?" And so the younger brother climbed on the back of the firstborn, and they began the journey. This is the parable of the river. Do you see yourself anywhere in that parable? Yeah. Have you found yourself in one of those 4 seats? Have you found yourself in multiple of those seats? I know that I have. There's a lot of pride of different varieties, like we spoke about this morning, in those other 4 seats. And outside of the different elements of those 4 brothers who tried to find their own way back when God so readily had made the way for them, Jesus, of course, being the eldest brother, sent to come and get and carry his brothers back home, there is this quality that I ask you to consider alongside of that this week. Every night when the brothers first landed, they spent time gathered around the fire and talking of home. Talking about their father, talking about the castle, and waiting for their father to come and get them. When they decided to stop talking about that is when they lost their way. That is when they became too blinded by various flavors of pride and ego and esteem to recognize when the eldest had actually come for them. In connection to what we just spoke about, whether the coming of Jesus or the birth of Jesus is worth our thought, I would only give you this tonight. One, we are one of the four brothers, maybe multiple at different times in our lives. Two, there's only one way back home, and that's with the eldest. Three, there are probably going to be a lot of people over the next few days gathered around the fire, talking about home, talking about the older brother. And I would implore you, no matter what your stance on holidays is, make sure you don't leave the fireside as well. Make sure you're a part of that conversation with them. And make sure you add what God has given you to the conversation of home and about the older brother. He is the only way for each and every one of us. Let's pray.